Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. I'm excited today, Tara, to meet your new friend. You'll have to tell us about this great family that you've met and their amazing story they're going to share about adoption.
It really is. Not too long ago, I had the privilege of going to Texas for a training with the Karen Purvis Institute for Child Development. And while I was there, I met a really sweet young mom named Amelia, and she's Canadian by way of Philadelphia. And her story was really, really intriguing to me, and I thought everybody would really want to meet her.
This gal is real.
Yes. So, Amelia, welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Amelia, why don't you tell us a bit about your family?
Sure. I have two daughters. The oldest daughter is Muncie, and she's 6 years old. We adopted her from India 2.5 years ago, and my younger daughter, Zara, is 20 months old.
So let's do the math here. So you were in India 2.5 years ago, and Zara is 20 months old. So the story is...
So while we were in India adopting Muncie, we also became pregnant. And so we had two children come to our family two different ways in 1 year.
Wow.
In 1 year. Wow.
Wow. So your family in... aside from being an adoptive family and having two girls join your family within a year, very differently, you and your husband are also kind of a conspicuous family. So you, Varun is Indian and you're American and you live in Canada. And also, Amelia, yeah. Aside from being a multicultural family and an adoptive family, tell us what you do for a living.
I work part-time as a therapist for families and children who have experienced trauma or are having attachment difficulties. So my professional life and my personal life overlap in a lot of ways.
And I love that on your blog. And so you had written before you brought your daughter home from India, you said, "How on earth will I know how to love and care for a child?" You said, "A child whose first months might have been filled with moment of neglect or fear, abuse or want. How?" I think we've all felt this way. "Will I get my life organized, my selfishness into check, and my energy constant?" I love your transparency.
So, Amelia, tell us a bit about how you and Varun decided that you wanted to be adoptive parents.
Well, we met when we were in university. My husband was going to university on one side of Canada, and I was going to university on the other side, but we were both involved in a campus ministry. So we met while we were on a missions trip in Africa, actually. And even there, while we were chatting, I had talked about wanting to prioritize adoption. I had two cousins who were both adopted from Asia, and two of my closest friends when I was growing up were adopted. And so it just seemed normal to me that if somebody didn't have a home, and somebody did have a home, then you would open up your home to them. So it was sort of a bit of a deal breaker when I met my husband. And thankfully, God had also put adoption on his heart. He had converted from Hinduism to Christianity when he was in university. And he really understood the gospel as, he really understood adoption in light of the gospel and how, you know, God adopted us into his family. And so that would be something that we could mirror in our own family.
So when you decided to bring home a child, you all decided to go to India, his home country.
Yeah. So we decided to adopt from India mostly because it seemed logical. My husband was from there. He and I both speak the language, him much better than I. And the times previously that we had visited India, we were really, really struck just by the poverty and the immense need. We had done lots of visits with different ministries that work with the poor and spent some time in slums. And it seemed like that's how God was leading our family. We also wanted to prioritize adoption. We felt called to begin our family that way. So we did not try for children biologically. But after 3 years of marriage, we began the adoption process from India. Because we felt personally that we wanted to make sure that if it was a priority for our family, that we did that first and then see what else God would lead us to. It actually took 4 years.
So the challenges and struggles within that itself were what?
I would say the main struggle was on the India side. It was very disorganized. So our adoption agency and our workers, everything was fast. We were completely adopt ready on the list in India within 5 months of starting the process. But then it took, from the time we were registered to the time we were matched, was 3 years. So it was very unpredictable. We were assigned to three different orphanages that all told us they didn't have children that met our requirements. We got bounced around. We were on waiting list. We had we had one referral that after several months ended up falling through.
Oh, that had to be difficult.
Yeah, that was towards the end of the process. That was right at the 3 year mark. And it sort of felt like, okay, is this ever going anywhere? Are we ever going to bring a child home? I was finished school. We were both working. It sort of felt like there's really nothing left to wait for. But God just kept inviting us to wait, and thankfully our families and our church were really supportive in our wait. It was, to be honest, it was very hard to see people even get married and have kids in the time it took us to wait. And we were the last people in our peer group to become parents, even though we had started much, much before. So finally, after 3.5 years, we were matched with Muncie. And the way that it works in India is you're matched and then lots and lots of months go by and you do court and passport visa and then you come home. And so we matched with her in just before her birthday, so September. And then by February, we weren't any closer to bringing her home. So we were on some Facebook adoption groups, talked to some people, and a couple of people had said, you know, if you go there, you can push things through a lot faster. And my mother-in-law, of course, was like, you know, if you come, we'll help you, we'll support you, you can stay with us. So we prayed about it a bit. We talked to our bosses and we decided we would take 6 weeks of parental leave each and go to India because we thought it would take about 6 weeks.
So 6 weeks later, you brought Muncie home?
No. So in April of 2016, we went to India and we were hoping we'd be there for 4 to 6 weeks. We visited the orphanage for a couple of days and then brought Muncie to our in-laws' house in Delhi, where we ended up staying for 5 months.
Wow. So, Amelia, through all of that, the waiting, the seeing your friends get married and have babies, the struggle of being bounced around, going to India thinking it was going to take 6 weeks and it took 5.5 months, what did you learn about yourself and what did you and Varun learn about God during that time?
It's a great question. I think the biggest thing, I would say the biggest overarching thing that we learned was that God was writing the story and that we were not in control. Because I so many times wanted, like, if I could just, you know, have a website where I could, like, log in and match myself to this child. Mm. Or if I could just talk to the lawyer, I could explain to them to submit the paperwork. Or even when we were in Delhi, we would go to the Canadian embassy day after day after day and wait. And I was like, if they would just let me inside, I could explain to them why they need to let us go home. And so it was kind of this continual surrender to, okay, God has a different timeline. God has a different plan. God even had a different child in mind than we thought he did. And so even now that we're home and sometimes things look different than what I would have hoped or expected, kind of God continuing to remind us that ultimately he is the one in charge and he is the one writing our story.
We've said often that this adoption process is many times far more about our own personal sanctification than even the child that the Lord has chosen for us or how he builds our family. And so I think learning that relinquishment of control is something that you have to learn and relearn over a lifetime.
That's what it feels like. Absolutely.
It really does. And just when you think you get everyone settled, their personalities change or they go through puberty or, you know, something happens and you realize, Lord, I really need you through this entire calling that our family needs you from sun up to sundown and you work while we're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I take great peace in that. Yep. So
me too. So, Amelia, once you got home with Muncie, did she, things settled in and life just went on and all of that difficult struggle type stuff of life you could just put behind you and move forward?
Yes and no. I would say that even a bit further back, when we brought Muncie from the orphanage to my in-law's house, you know, everybody kind of has this idea in their head of, you know, the announcement picture where you're holding the child and it's like, okay, the adoption process is over, happily ever after. And that was not what we experienced. And I know from talking to many families, that's not the experience that's normal. Mm-hmm. From the day that we brought her to my in-laws last month, she was grieving. She was 3.5 years old and she was sad. She was sad to leave the home that she had known for years. And it took months to get her to laugh and smile and play and to feel connected to us. So I think for myself, it was, and for my husband, it was sort of a rough landing into parenthood. You know, you expect that you would care for a child and they would love you and it would just be this mutually beneficial, mutually rewarding experience. And instead it was just pouring and pouring love into somebody who was completely brokenhearted. So when we came home to Canada, thankfully, and as I said, God had been working the timing out, we did have 5 months of cocooning where we had, our time in India was, our world was really small. I stayed home with Muncie and I didn't have many friends there. I didn't have a lot of places to go. And so we pretty much just played day in and day out and day in and day out. And if we had been home in North America, that would not have happened.
No, that was a great gift.
I would have been running errands. I would have been seeing my friends. I would have tried to cocoon and I wouldn't have done it well. So by the time we got back to Canada, we had forged a pretty good bond. And I think that made the culture shock and the language shock and the weather shock all a lot easier for her. So we did, we kind of hit like an okay patch for a while. But then we had a baby. Had to figure out how to nurse and all of the other things that you do when you have an infant that are different than having a preschooler. And so I would say over the past 2.5 years, if I look at the overall trajectory, Muncie is adapting incredibly well. She feels that she belongs in our family. Her English is perfect. She loves playing. She loves reading. She loves her extended family. She knows some of her story and is able to make some sense of it. But there are some really rough days. And there are some really rough moments of regular days. And I think being able to see the big picture is helpful because in those moments, it sort of feels like, aren't we on the other side of the happily ever after? Like, why is this not feeling happy?
Right. So I know that you talked about how your church had been really supportive of you when you were in India and in your process along the way. But, you know, I also know that when we're adopting, that we want people to see it as a happy moment because we don't want to be the reason that other people don't want to adopt.
Right.
So we want almost sometimes to paint this picture of, I think you've said it before, you don't want to paint you that you want to paint an Instagram picture of your adoption. And then when it doesn't happen that way, did you try to cover that up or were you vulnerable enough to be honest with your community so that they could be what they're supposed to be, which is the body of Christ?
It's a great question. I think when we were in India, we were able to be pretty honest because our struggle was so obvious. We had a lot of issues with the orphanage and with officials and with people being manipulative. And that's something that we were able to communicate to the people who were close to us. And eventually we ended up even writing a petition to members of our government, and like thousands of people signed that. So we were able to communicate some of our needs and some of the ways it was hard, especially, you know, the homesickness and feeling like, what did we just get ourselves into? Parenting is not what we expected. But I do remember sending a few texts those first couple of weeks and wondering, like, is there something wrong with me? Because even the moms that I was close to hadn't exactly said what I was feeling. And everybody was really excited for me. And I was feeling discouraged and scared and sad. And it took me a couple of weeks to be able to say, like, did other people feel this? Is this normal? Am I broken? Like, what's the problem? And then when we came home, things were pretty okay for a while. But as I started to see like seasons of behavior or transitions that were difficult or like patterns emerging, that's when I started to say, okay, we need to be more real about this. And I think our church needs to be more real. Our church has a foster and adoptive care team. And we all kind of started the journey at the same time. So it's a new ministry in mm-hmm. our church. And we all kind of got into the trenches at the same time. And, you know, we just had a meeting a few weeks ago and kind of looked around and we were remembering our first event that we put on for the church, where none of us really had kids in our home yet, but we had all gone through the training. And we're like, everyone should do this. God says you should do it. It's going to be awesome.
It's for everyone.
And, and we put on an event for Orphan Care Sunday 3 weeks ago and we were all just crying.
Yes.
And saying like, this is so, so hard and it's so beautiful. And we still think that God is calling us to do it. And we still think that, you know, you can be involved in many different ways. But it's not what we thought it was. And so there is an increasing freedom in our community to be able to speak honestly and to ask each other for help, for ideas, for tips, to ask for real prayer requests.
I just love what you shared also on your blog. You said parenting is messy. Adoption is messy. Parenting a child from a hard place is just messy. And you also share, I just love this, that you used to think that adopting meant getting things together enough to be a superstar parent. And I think when we drop that guard in community and say, look, we're struggling here, mm-hmm. you know, or things, we're in a good spot right now. Things are going well. Tara's heard that from me for years. We're struggling or things mm-hmm. are going well. You know, it really makes us more approachable.
Right.
You know, and more able to do Galatians, you know, do the fruit of the Spirit and say, mm-hmm. you know, here's why the Lord's building this fruit in our lives and here's how he's doing it.
Right.
And it's through the tough spots, it's through the mess, and it's through heartache sometimes.
Right. Well, and as believers, we're called to bear one another's burdens.
Yes.
And Galatians 6:2 tells us that we are to bear one another's burdens. And so how have you seen the body really come alongside you all as you've learned how to become parents?
Well, to be honest, Tara, we've been extremely lucky. God has really, really blessed us through our church community. I left this part of the story out, but when we were that February, when we were preparing to go to India, our apartment building flooded and we had to leave our apartment.
Oh.
And so we were bouncing around from hotels to friends' houses for about 6 weeks prior to leaving to India. So when we went to India, all of our possessions, well, the ones that weren't destroyed by the flood, were in a storage locker and we didn't have an apartment to come home to.
Oh
my goodness.
And
she laughs about it now.
While we were in India, our church took out a rental in our name and moved us back into an apartment. They painted the walls, they decorated, they bought toys and clothes, they stocked our fridge, they stocked our freezer, they stocked our cabinets. So when we got off the plane, not only did a friend pick us up and, you know, drive us home, but we walked into a home that we hadn't even left.
Mm.
We had kind of said like, oh, we'll stay in an Airbnb and then move once we get home. So that was a huge thing. Our church has really mm-hmm. served us practically. They, you know, we always do meals when people first bring children into their home. But even more than that, I would say we have a WhatsApp group of moms in our church who are adoptive or foster moms, and we're constantly texting each other, you know, encouragements, Bible verses, SOS prayers, ideas, crowdsourcing parenting tips. Our church has also put on an adoptive and foster conference with Jason Johnson
mm-hmm.
and several of the elders and pastors are involved in adoption or foster care. So there's just a real sense in the church as supporting each other, bearing each other's burdens. And as we've all kind of started to become more honest and more transparent, I haven't seen it put a damper on people's willingness to join. and to get involved. And in some ways, it's almost given people freedom to share other things and to share what else is hard in parenting, even bio kids, or what's hard in other ministries that people are involved in.
That's awesome. So, Amelia, how would you say that how your church has served you, how you've seen the body of Christ rise up to be what they're called to be, how has that changed you and Varun as far as how you've then in turn served others?
I think we are in a much more broken and real place than we were 5 years ago. When we started our adoption process, we were both working professionals, and we are part of a ministry where we live in a neighborhood in our city that is low income, lots of immigrants and refugees, and like a crowded urban neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So we serve here with our team. And before we had children, you know, we would work and then we would come home and minister to our neighbors and love people. And we were always in the position of serving. So we would be the ones doing the moving. We'd be the ones bringing the meals. We'd be the ones taking people to emerge in the night. We were kind of the helpers or the rescuers. Mm-hmm. And now we are not. Now our neighbors see our children on the ground screaming, and our neighbors have brought us food when our kids have been sick or when we first came home or when my daughter was born. And the same thing in our church. You know, we've moved from a place of having tons of energy and sense of time to a place of not, and mm-hmm. a place of saying, you know, it's going to be a mess, but you're welcome to come over for supper. Or, you know, we'd love to do that. Our kids are going to come too, and we're going to leave when we need to leave. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely taught us, I think, a lot of, it's challenged our default that sort of, you know, we can earn God's favor by mm-hmm. having things together, or that we can, you know, there's even an element of pride that comes in with working hard and serving hard. And I think God has really challenged that and broken that down. And, you know, even last night we were trying to do an Advent devotion. And, wow, it was a gong show. There was food flying and people screaming and people falling off of chairs and the Bible was being grabbed at.
It was a real night with little people.
It was. We're just looking at each other across the mayhem and going, like, what do we do? And does other people's devotion time look like this after supper?
That's the stuff we need to be posting.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Instagram picture for the day.
It really is. I love what you said, that you're learning to be okay with the middle place of the mess. What do you mm-hmm. mean by that?
Mm-hmm. I think we like to tell stories after they're finished. Like I told you the flood story. Because it was over. Yes. I said, oh, this happened a long time ago and it's all better now. Our house is decorated and we're good. And that's the way we like to tell stories. Or we like to tell the beginning of the story. Like, hey, we're going to adopt. It's going to be awesome. But that middle place of this is incredibly hard and we're stuck and we don't know what to do, or we don't like this. We regret this. We're afraid of this. We don't like to talk about that. And yet that's where pretty much all of our lives are. Majority of the time. So I think for me, it's been important, you know, seeing other moms begin their adoption process, or even moms who are pregnant, and being able to say, it's okay that you're not going to get to this point where you're like, okay, I figured it out and we're good now. There's going to be new stages, there's going to be new ages, there's going to be new behaviors. And the reality is that kids who come from hard places, trauma affects their brain, and it's going to be a lifelong challenge to help them to stay regulated and to understand their story, grieve through their story, understand their place of belonging in your family. And we can't just think, okay, they're home now. They've been home for 2 years. They've been home for 4 years. Things should be good. It's not a realistic expectation.
No, it's not.
For us or for them.
No, it's not. Yeah, and like you say, we just learned to love extra, and you added that you loved it. You make room at the table or on your laps for lots of hours of play, that the gig is up, you're not fancy, nor are you put together.
You know, you might be thinking, oh, well, she has a really good and supportive church, but mine isn't, or I don't have any friends who fostered or adopted. And I was thinking, okay, what would I say to that? And I would say, you need to find one and make one. Mm. You need people that you can send SOS text to when bedtime has become hours, or kids are having a meltdown at a birthday party. You need to be able to have grown-up conversations and receive honest love from people. Mm. So whether that means, you know, standing up at your church and asking people to just come and pray with you, even if you're the only one at your church who's adopted, you can still gather a huge team at your church. Maybe it means looking on Facebook for adoptive or foster families in your area, talking to your social worker, your agency. You need connection as much as our kids do. Jason Johnson, who's a big orphan advocate, he says that everyone can do something. So mm-hmm. I would just encourage, yeah, if you're feeling lonely or you're feeling like you don't have that supportive community, to reach out to people around you and say, hey, you may not be called to adoption or foster care, but our family needs some help. You know, can you mow the lawn? Can you take the bio kids out on a date? Can you bring a meal? Can you pray for us? Yeah, I'm just passionate about helping our church to nurture a culture of caring for vulnerable kids. And I think that that's something that each of us can encourage our communities to do as well.
Yeah, and I agree. And in the early church, you know, Paul wrote over and over, like Philippians 2:4, let each of you look not only to your own interests, but to the interest of others. Mm-hmm. I remember a day Tara just showed up at my house. I still had my pajamas. And I just brought a child, you know, a new little one into the home. She was 3 years old. And we were just having a rough day. And she said, here's hot soup. You know, and that just meant the world to me. Like, I could finish the day. Mm-hmm. I could finish well that day just because I had been encouraged. And so you're right. Mm-hmm. It's teaching one another within the body how to care for each other and love one another through this journey.
That's great. Well, Amelia, we really appreciate you being with us today. And I think what you said earlier about embracing the middle of the mess is really okay. And that's probably... for me, the biggest takeaway today is to lean into the hard and abide in the Lord through it all. So we really appreciate you being vulnerable enough to tell your story.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today, as Amelia Rana has shared so transparently how it took them 4 years to walk through this journey of adoption, and then the real work begins at home. And if you'd like more information about her, or you'd like to read along in her story, we'll share that at the end of the podcast in our show notes. And we'd also appreciate it if you take just a minute and give us a review on iTunes, or just leave a comment, and it kind of directs us and tells us which way we need to go with future podcasts. So thanks for listening, and we look forward to being with you again.
You have been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit sendrelief.org.